With the school year encroaching, indeed even having started for some, I wasn't surprised last week to see the usual laments from parents on Facebook about their morning routine. It seemed that either people were all about making resolutions, that they were going to get up half an hour early this year, have their lunches already packed, eat a hot breakfast, and have time to read together as a family before they left the house. Or there were plaintive pleas for help strategizing about how to get the whole family out of the house in matching shoes. Not that the whole family had to, all of their shoes had to match, but you get that each family person was in a matching pair. The tension that I read between these lines was palpable. Already, just days into the school year, I heard real heartache and disconnect as families struggle to live the tightly packed schedules that our society placed before us. Sure, every once in a while there would be a response from a sanctimonious parent who had it all together, who would point out, I just pack the lunches the night before, I lay out the clothes before bedtime, I do the prep work for tomorrow's hot breakfast, I go for a run before the kids get up, allow only 5 minutes of screen time, and do all of this so that we can have 10 minutes of prayer devotional time as a family before we leave the house for the day. I loved one mom's response to this. She said, don't the kids live with you in the evening too? The bottom line is, friends, that the struggle to fit everything into our jam-packed lives is real. Of course, you're not exempt from this struggle just because you're not responsible for getting multiple people out the door. How many of you respond to work email long after you've left the office, or even take work phone calls or meetings while on vacation? I'm seeing some yeses. Last year, I told a colleague of mine that I don't have my work email delivered to my phone. Do you know what her response was? She immediately grabbed my phone and tried to explain to me how to get it. I had to explain to her, a pastor, that no email on my phone is intentional, that it's about setting some boundaries, some good boundaries, between me and my work, that you all can call or text me any time of day or night and get me in a heartbeat, but email is responded to from my desk here. That's about Sabbath, about not being enslaved to email. That it's about modeling to all of you that while work is important, a faith-driven life puts boundaries on it, puts limits on it. In our gospel passage today, Jesus was teaching in the synagogue on the Sabbath, and he heals a woman who a spirit had crippled for 18 years. Healing on the Sabbath is an important theme in Luke. This is actually the fourth of five times in the Gospel of Luke that Jesus will heal on the Sabbath. He's critiqued each time, by the way. In order to understand just what's at stake here, we have to go back to the declaration of the Sabbath. Now, most of us think of Sabbath keeping as following God's example of resting on the seventh day. Most of us think that, or the logic goes, that if in 6 days God created all of the universe, and on the seventh day God rested, so too should we. And that is indeed the logic of Sabbath, if we're reading Exodus. But there's another version of the Ten Commandments that we find in Deuteronomy. Here we're told that the reason that we are to observe the Sabbath is because God has liberated us from slavery. Deuteronomy 5:15 reads, "Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep holy the Sabbath day." Much more compelling than "God rested so you should rest" is "God freed you from bondage." God freed you from slavery, from being bound by unjust systems and life-sapping toil. God freed you from slavery. And the purpose of Sabbath is to make sure that you celebrate that liberation, that you remember that liberation, that you revere that liberation, that you remain cognizant of that liberation, and that you become an agent of liberation. So why is setting aside a day each week to be unproductive, not tethered to society's calendars and clocks and production consumption system? Why is this so different from resting because God rested? I think it's similar to the difference between sympathy, empathy, and compassion. Sympathy is when we care because someone suffers. Empathy is when we feel someone else's suffering. Compassion is when we're moved to do something about someone else's suffering. You see, resting because God rested is a passive act. Grounding oneself and one's weekly rhythms in the understanding that we have been liberated, that we've been freed by God, is active. It's charged with ramifications. Grounding ourselves in the Sabbath as liberation is a continual reminder to resist the systems that try to keep us bound. The production-consumption cycle, the need to constantly make more in order to get more, the addiction cycle of never having or being enough. At the same time, it compels us to be about the work of liberating others. As a follower of Jesus and a student of the Word, once I am free, it is my responsibility to be about breaking down the systems that enslave others. These are some of the theological roots of our church's work on immigration issues. Once you're freed, it's your responsibility to be about securing the freedom of others. Sabbath is our ever-present reminder of how grace-filled and beautiful it is to live free. Jesus healed a woman on the Sabbath, liberated her from her affliction, and was criticized by a religious leader. A religious leader, someone who should have known everything that I just shared with you, who should have cared about liberation and our responsibility to be agents of others' freedom. Our gospel passage, by having a religious leader critique Jesus about healing on the Sabbath, points out that human systems are not moral entities. Only people are. Governments don't have virtues. Churches don't have virtues. Only the people who make them up do. As Henry David Thoreau argues in one of the bedrock pieces of American literature, his short work called Civil Disobedience, democracy is no guarantee of morality. as majorities simply by being majorities do not gain the virtues of wisdom and justice. Or to say it in the opposite way, an individual's conscience is not necessarily inferior to the decisions of a political body or a majority. Therefore, Thoreau argues, it is morally better to cultivate respect for what is right rather than respect for law. To cultivate respect for what is right over than respect for law. What Jesus is doing when he heals on the Sabbath is putting flesh on the idea that law, by virtue of being law, does not make something right. When the Wisconsin Conference, United Church of Christ, was voting several years ago about becoming a immigrant welcoming conference, there were several amendments posed to suggest that we become an immigrant welcoming conference, but subject ourselves to all law. That was handily defeated. Lest we imagine these are just philosophical gymnastics, I'll remind you of two headlines from just the last year. It was just this week last year that the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that feeding the homeless is a protected act under the First Amendment. Yes, this was actually litigated. Cities all over the nation, from Atlanta to Tampa to El Cajon, California, passed ordinances banning people from feeding the homeless. Let that sink in. As a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, you should have been outraged. Just because it was law didn't make it right. The court's ruling acknowledged that sharing food with another is one of the most basic forms of human expression. And so it is a First Amendment right, they said, to be able to feed the poor. On the flip side of that, however, four women were arrested and found guilty this spring after leaving water in the desert. These women volunteer for an organization called No More Deaths, which is dedicated to saving the lives of people crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. They were convicted of abandoning property. Friends, providing food and water to someone in need may be unlawful, but it will never be unjust. Our text takes us in two very different directions today. On a personal level, it aims to free our everyday living from the tyranny of societal systems. Make sure that you take time regularly for rejuvenation, time that is not beholden to schedules or productivity. Take time because God liberated you. Because God has freed you. Don't enslave yourself to the calendar, to email, to the bottle or screens or debt. And on an interpersonal level, it aims at once to free us both from unjust laws while at the same time compelling us to be agents of that freedom in others' lives as well. There's a lot going on here, isn't there? So, to wrap it up, my prayer for us all this week is that by embracing the freedom that God has offered us through Jesus, we will all become multipliers of that freedom. May it be so.